biggest misunderstandings were those that men arrived at seemingly on their own. The temples were, unfortunately, less prone to supernatural manipulation. Sneaking into the building while pretending to be an out-of-town nun on a pilgrimage and absconding with one of their holy pearls was easy enough, but anything further than that would be ill-advised. Monks, priests, and paladins had skills that fortified them against mental attacks, as well as the power to cleanse such afflictions from others or themselves. That wasn't to say these holy men and women hated demons for wanting to spread misery, death, and destruction. That was like hating a fire for spreading in the woods or resenting the rain for causing a flood. The servants of the gods were naturally wary of unbound demons or those ordered to commit atrocities. But then again, so was everyone else. It was considered just another misuse of magical power, and a summoner was considered responsible for crimes carried out by their familiar. However, it was worth noting that the vast majority of such incidents were caused by ignorance rather than malice. Most warlocks that chose to use the power of a contracted demonic entity did so with well-meaning intentions. It was hard to deny that one could do great things if they correctly applied their familiar's abilities, but keeping a tight leash on a demon was harder than it sounded. That was why many warlocks opted to use beholders and hellhounds as their primary contracted servants. Fiends and stalkers were more impactful when it came to combat, but also much more difficult to keep in check, and far more dangerous should they be allowed to roam free. As for succubi, although their offensive magic was definitely potent, it was also technically their secondary feature. Suffice it to say that any adventurer who had one of these temptresses under their command would face a lot of ridicule and suspicion almost by default. All things considered, though, the number of people who opted to go the route of demon tamers was relatively small, accounting for barely a fifth of all warlocks. Most of them opted for the safer route of honing their arcane might and ruinous magic, which did not lose out to other caster jobs. As for the ones who opted for the riskier, and potentially more powerful, method of relying on demonic power, they were tolerated. Some of them were even recognized and lauded for their abilities to control their familiars to a fine degree, which was the exact opposite of what Boxy did. The mimic pretty much let its demons do as they pleased so long as they produced results and didn't inconvenience it. Its entire stance on the ethical ramifications of using malignant extra-dimensional entities could be summed up as such. Responsibility? Guilt? What are those? Are they tasty? They're not? Then I don't need them. Go bring me tasty things. This sort of careless outlook was why the shapeshifter continued its daily routine over the past week, willfully ignorant of the civil unrest its demons were causing. It began each morning by visiting the Mercenary Guild with the express purpose of taking on new quests or turning in finished ones for profit. After concluding its business there, Boxy would then move on to practicing its artisan job, either by itself or by taking lessons from Fizzy. So far it had made a plethora of mechanical contraptions that relied on clockwork expertise, such as a few dozen retractable blades of varying quality, 25 hand-sized clocks, 2 basic repeating crossbows, several pick-proof combination locks, and a disturbingly high number of music box toys. Selling these mechanical wonders proved to be remarkably easy, especially when it came to the better-than-average door locks or the plainly entertaining music boxes. These sales were the point where Boxy was finally able to recover a more sizable chunk of the money spent on parts, but it was still suffering a steady loss. It was worth it, however. The Mimic's Artificer job had gone all the way to level 12, which also unlocked the next skill in the series, explosives handling. Flashbangs and dynamite were the basic explosives that could be made based on this skill alone, but when combined with clockwork expertise, the artificer could also give birth to several nasty surprises. Time-delayed explosives, pressure-activated landmines, and tripwire bombs were all within reach. There was even an evolution of the Blade Blossom called the Blade Boom. It worked much the same way as the original, only it used the power of blast powder rather than springs to form a rudimentary fragmentation grenade. But even though Boxy was improving steadily as an artificer, its warlock job was still stuck at level 25 and would stay that way for a while by the look of things. There existed 2 methods for raising the level cap of a people job. The first, easiest, and most commonly used method was to find a suitable teacher. For example, in order to become a level 1 artificer, Boxy had to find an artificer that was at least level 25 and had the mentor skill. This was a general access skill that anyone could acquire with enough time and practice, which facilitated training and teaching in all their forms. It was also mandatory if one hoped to pass on their jobs to others. Fizzy was overqualified for this position, but that wasn't a bad thing. Since she was a level 56 arc light artificer, she could also break the level 25 limit on Boxy's tinkerer job, provided her mentor skill reached a level 4 by that point. One would then need to find a level 75 teacher with a level 7 mentor skill to break past 50, and a level 100 teacher with a level 10 mentor skill to progress above level 75. In other words, the Mimic had to find the appropriate warlock trainer if it wanted to further its only spell-slinging job. And therein lay the problem. The vast majority of combat-oriented job trainers all belonged to one guild or another and refused to teach anyone who wasn't part of their organization. And joining such an organization meant undergoing a full appraisal to verify one's capabilities by revealing their status. Needless to say, they would immediately reject Boxy's application when they found out it was a monster in disguise. The other method for furthering one's job was much more difficult and was known simply as a breakthrough. In order to accomplish this, an individual had to diligently train all of that job's unlocked skills until they reached the maximum level 10. A stringent and rigorous training regime would be necessary to achieve such a feat, and attempting this path was likely to take months, maybe even years, of hard work. There was also the hidden caveat that, while leveling these skills, it was highly unlikely for an adventurer to progress in job levels, leaving them in a bit of a rut. These things made many people shy away from such a path. Why would they spend an exorbitant amount of time like that on something easily achieved in an afternoon with the help of a trainer and a sack of gold? Even if achieving a breakthrough awarded a perk that boosted XP and skill proficiency for the related job by 10%, that was little more than a consolation prize. An adventurer would simply grow faster if they sought out a mentor, which was why this approach was reserved only for those who couldn't find a trainer or were unable to muster the fee. Thus, at least for the moment, Boxy's warlock job was stuck at level 25. Rather than obsess about it, the Mimic decided to turn its attention towards improving the things it could. The artificer job was progressing steadily but seemed to require slightly more expensive components as time went on. Fizzy herself confirmed that the necessary raw material costs would steadily climb due to the scarcity or difficulty of obtaining those substances. Even with the discounts she gave her star pupil, it still proved to be a considerable strain on Boxy's wallet, and showed no sign of letting up. At least, not until Boxy decided it had had enough and cashed in on its investment. In the meantime, however, its mimic job had actually stagnated for a while. Boxy had spent perhaps too much time focusing on widgets and gadgets and not enough on murdering the crap out of things. Both that and its immediate monetary concerns could be solved by completing quests via the Mercenary Guild, which was why the monster was currently out here in the Whispering Marshes south of Erosa in the middle of the night. The area was a wide, depressing swampland that had formed as a result of the Whispering Canal's sprawling delta. The deep and narrow river became shallow and wide and split up into dozens of outlets as it approached the ocean. As a result, the entire place was perpetually wet, overgrown with reeds and tall grass, and always seemed to have a thick mist that limited visibility. The two main gripes adventurers had with it, however, was that it smelled horrible and hid several annoying species of monsters. The former wasn't particularly a problem for a chest with no innate sense of smell, and the latter was the main reason it was here in the first place. The mimic scuttled along slowly across the muddy ground, using stealth to minimize its presence. Its normally narrow spider legs were uncharacteristically tipped with small discs that increased their surface area and prevented the monster from sinking into the soft mud. It then suddenly stopped, planted all eight of its legs firmly on the ground, and, for lack of a better term, crouched. The slender black limbs then uncoiled suddenly as Boxy leapt up into the air, reaching a height of about 3 meters. The spidery appendages on its side disappeared back inside its body, and four long, narrow metal rods with pointed ends popped out from its underside. It fell like a brick into a nearby puddle, driving the four oversized nails deep into the ground with a splash, a squish, and a crunch. Assassination skill triggered. Your attack has dealt 350% more damage. Target HP minus 253. Proficiency level increased. Assassination is now level 8. Agility plus 2. Dexterity plus 1. Strength plus 1. The puddle the mimic landed in erupted as a gigantic 3-meter-long gray lobster emerged. It thrashed about wildly, trying to shake off the stubborn box that had nailed itself to its back. But it couldn't because Boxy had already expanded the tips of its makeshift spears to form something akin to fishhooks. It had already firmly anchored itself to the raging crustacean's backside. Its unwilling mount attempted to reach back and pry the damnable box out of its back, but its long, powerful pincers simply could not bend back that far. Boxy opened its jaw and produced two fleshy tendrils wrapped around its favorite shiny things. A pair of mithril daggers. It swung them downwards in a wide arc, easily penetrating the invertebrate monster's outer shell and gouging out its flesh. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 84. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 103. Yet, despite driving them down to the hilt, its attack was still considered a minor stab wound. Relatively speaking, poking something this large with daggers was like stabbing a person with a nail. It would take far more than two strikes to bring down a creature that, based on the shapeshifter's previous experiences, had around 1,500 HP on average. Which was why the mimic withdrew its daggers and struck again and again. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 136. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 122. Boxy's assault would do a lot more damage if it could hit anything vital like a heart, neck, lung, or skull, but its current position meant it could only strike at muscle and meat. Then there was the fact that these things seemed to have some sort of defenses which greatly reduced physical damage taken. It was probably due to their combination of passive skills not too dissimilar to the mimic's natural armor. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 92. You have inflicted a minor scratch. Target HP minus 13. The oversized lobster didn't exactly sit still and let itself be stabbed to death, either. It thrashed about wildly, even going as far as rolling across the ground, which caused some of the thrusting attacks to veer off course and end up as glancing blows. That was just an unintended side effect, though, as what the crabby crustacean was trying to do was shake its attacker off its blind spot. Unfortunately, its efforts only made things worse as it inadvertently drove the stubborn chest's steel legs deeper inside itself. Being squished against mud or submerged in water was not nearly enough to discourage a dangerous mimic of Boxy's caliber, which just kept relentlessly stinging its prey. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 115. You have inflicted a minor stab wound. Target HP minus 87. Growing desperate, the lobster reared up and threw its head back and sprayed a shower of corrosive acid into the air. The deep green liquid then promptly rained down atop the violent monster currently attached to the invertebrate's back. But Boxy had already taken countermeasures in the form of a large, rectangular bronze shield retrieved from its storage. Bronze was a metal that, although not extremely tough, was naturally resistant to magic. And this particular shield had a special anti-corrosive coating applied to its surface, courtesy of the local alchemist. The specialized piece of gear blocked most of the acidic deluge, but some of it still splashed onto the mimic's body, melting parts of its flesh. You have been burned by acid. HP minus 124. Boxy's prey, however, seemed to be completely unfazed by this. Its own corrosive spit simply washed over its gray shell as if it were water, but the relentless barrage of stab wounds didn't slow down one bit. So it kept spewing acid all over itself as much as it could. What ensued was a frantic contest of endurance between two monsters. One just kept stabbing relentlessly while the other tried to flush it out with caustic fluids. This carried on for almost a full minute before the large crustacean's four legs finally gave out. It collapsed in the shallow waters of the marsh, its green blood flowing freely from the countless holes in its lifeless body. The mimic had no room to celebrate its victory, however, and quickly retreated from the body. The spot where it had been mere moments ago was then bathed in streams of acid that shot out from beneath the surface of the murky waters surrounding the fresh corpse. Such an attack might have worked against a less prepared monster, but this one came armed with a magical perception field 20 meters in diameter. The mimic didn't rely on simple eyesight to watch out for ambushes, so sneaking up on it was pretty much impossible. It was ironic that a monster which instinctively relied on deception and camouflage was so well equipped to deal with enemies that used the same approach. Boxy skittered away from the scene with all due haste. It was confident it could take down one of those things in open combat. A 2-on-1 was also doable if it put its warlock job to work, although that would mean less XP would go towards the mimic job. 4 of those, though? That was simply too much. It was far better to apply hit-and-run tactics when fighting this particular species of monster, at least in Boxy's personal opinion. Granted, that meant it would take a while to fulfill the quota for its current quest, but that wasn't a problem since there was no time limit involved anyway. Slay 20 Merc Dwellers. Description: the population of Merc Dwellers that inhabit the marshes to the south of Erosa has increased to an unacceptable degree. Lord Mayor Osorlov has commanded that these creatures be reduced in number to ensure they do not endanger the surrounding area. Difficulty: 3 stars. Deposit: 50 GP. Reward: 400 GP. Progress: 7 out of 20. The mimic could take the slow and easy route, though that was by no means its only method of fighting. It still had a number of special surprises waiting inside its storage, and Snack was currently circling overhead to provide magical support if needed. It didn't want to use either of those options unless necessary. Killing a Merc Dweller and then escaping its inevitable backup was easy enough since they were horrible runners and had no chance of catching the highly adaptable spider chest. The succubus was there just in case something unexpected popped up. And judging from that racket coming from the thick mist behind the mimic, something did indeed pop up. Although Boxy would be hard-pressed to call that unexpected considering it was already looking for one of those anyway. Slay 1 Merc Dweller Queen. Description: the population of Merc Dwellers that inhabit the marshes to the south of Erosa has increased to an unacceptable degree. Lord Mayor Osorlov has commanded that the source of this problem be culled in order to ensure the stability of the region. Difficulty: 5 stars. Deposit: 50 GP. Reward: 900 GP. Progress: 0 out of 1. Part 8. The Merc Dweller Queen was about the size and shape of a 2-story peasant house, with an appearance closer to that of a crab than a lobster. Her shell was much harder than the common variety, and one swipe of her massive claws would probably crush a civilian into paste. The related quest's relatively high 5-star rating was well-deserved, though it wasn't because of the monster's strength. Although formidable in and of itself, the queen's personal might alone was enough to classify her as a 4-star target. In reality, it was her swarm of escorts that helped bump the threat assessment to the next level. The towering behemoth let out another screech that echoed through the marshes, causing every Merc Dweller in the vicinity to stir and wake up. Dozens of them popped up out of the ground and started converging on the intruder that dared to threaten their mother. The sheer numerical advantage they had made it easy to see why the local guilds deemed this to be a level 100 threat. So then, why did a creature that was a level 39 mimic, level 25 warlock, and level 12 artificer willingly set off on such a quest? Because it had a way of leveling the playing field, of course. But first, it had to make some preparations before the queen's disgruntled subjects tracked it down. The thick fog wouldn't help hide it, though. These Merc Dwellers seemed to have some way of locating their quarry that wasn't reliant on sight, as evidenced by how the first wave of them was already rapidly approaching. Boxy had already accounted for that and was confident it could manage as long as they were bunched up. It opened its storage and retrieved the apple-sized 12-sided spell crystal it had prepared in advance. It was a good thing that a queen showed up so soon or it would have wasted a focusing crystal. Those things had a cost of 120 GP each, and it didn't feel like wasting that money by letting the spell crystal expire. Thankfully, The level 5 crystallized magic skill afforded it a generous 30-minute window in which to use it, which had proven to be enough. However, it didn't look like Queenie was wasting any time either. The mimic carefully tracked the stupidly tall and oddly spherical shadow through the fog with its cat-like eyes. It didn't sound like much, but that was an impressive feat considering the near-pitch blackness of this marsh during cloudy nights like this one. Thankfully, becoming an artificer had given Boxy access to the perception attribute, which helped sharpen its senses. This applied both to the eyesight it had copied from the Janther and the magical perception field it was born with, the latter of which had been extremely handy in finding the submerged or buried murk dwellers. The semi-solid soil around these parts was quite noisy and fuzzy, so it wasn't easy to pick out a slumbering monster in the middle of all that. Boxy didn't have anywhere near enough perception to completely overcome that problem, but it certainly helped. Right now, however, its natural senses were telling it about a pissed-off gigantic crab that was rapidly approaching, prompting the spider chest to break out into a run. It took a moment to reach into its storage and take out one more thing, a flare launcher similar to the one the sweeper subjugation group tried to use about a month ago. It used the flesh tendrils spilling out of its mouth to aim it at the sky and trigger it, sending a bright red light screaming into the sky.
"Snack! Arms! Come to me!"
it commanded telepathically.
"Yes, master."
"On my way, boss!"
Cora had been ordered to stay about half a kilometer away since she was the complete opposite of subtle. Having her around would have made it more difficult to pounce on the sleeping monsters, but that was no longer a concern. The size of her stride and her absurd physical conditioning meant she would reach Boxy pretty quickly anyway. As for Zira, she swooped in from above not 2 seconds after being called and glided along the ground on her demonic wings, just above the mimic. It was a good thing her moronic master remembered to send that signal or she would have never found it in this fog.
"Snack! Take the sucky thing and use it! Make sure you get all the small crabbies!"
Boxy stretched out its tongue and handed the pitch-black spell crystal to its familiar. The succubus grabbed hold of it, and a rather troubling twinkle appeared in her eye.
"Do not get caught by the sucky thing! I will need your magic for the next part!"
Her master still wasn't completely sure about the nature of her eccentricities, but it had already noticed how enthusiastic she got whenever she handled items of great destructive power.
"Yes, master,"
she replied with a hint of disappointment. The succubus gave her wings a few powerful beats and ascended into the night sky, dyed red by the flare's light bouncing off the thick fog. She was able to easily see the massive shadow of the murk-dweller queen pass under her. The gigantic monster had no trouble keeping up with the agile spider chest due to her massive gait, but her brood was slow and trailed behind their mother in a tight-knit group. Zira wasn't sure exactly how many of them had gathered by now or whether the item she was given would be enough to catch them all, but orders were orders.
"Master, I'm going."
"Okay."
"Banana!"
she chanted. The pitch-black spell crystal in her hands shimmered slightly in response to the keyword, indicating it had been properly armed.
"One, two, now!"
She let the item drop from her hands and then rapidly ascended. The crystallized form of the mimic singularity spell fell silently through the night sky. It landed squarely on top of the large queen, instantly shattering open and releasing its contents, a miniature black hole created through ruin magic. The mud, the water, even the very air got dragged towards a singular point. The murk dwellers, following their mother, unwittingly entered its effective range and began floating helplessly up into the air. Even the gigantic queen was unable to break away from the sudden gravitational pull and had to resort to digging her massive feet and claws into the mud in an effort to avoid being swept away. Some of her offspring did the same, but the vast majority of them floated upwards and coalesced into one gigantic ball of floating crayfish. Since the singularity spell crystal's point of impact was right next to the queen's upper shell, it almost seemed like the giant crab had an afro made out of smaller crabs. Boxy was also not exempt from the effects of its own spell. The distance between itself and the point of impact was only 16 meters, mostly due to the sheer size of its target, while the singularity had an effective radius of over 20. 22, to be precise, what with the 10% area effect radius bonus from its collateral damage perk. Either way, the Singularity's pull wasn't anywhere near as powerful this far out, allowing Boxy to avoid getting caught up in it by clinging desperately to the ground. However, while Zira did indeed manage to hit the vast majority of the crabbies with the sucky thing, none of them were actually dying. Oh, sure, the ones at the very center of the floating lobster sphere were getting crushed under the weight of their kin, but the majority of them were left unharmed. The Singularity spell did not do much in terms of damage. That was fine, though, as it had brilliantly done its job of grouping up and restraining those Merc Dwellers after the Mimic rounded them all up. All things considered, the first part of Boxy's plan had been a great success. As for the second bit, that was far simpler. All the shapeshifter needed to do was open its storage wide and let a series of 8 brown cloth satchels fall out of it. The Singularity caught the lightweight hemp bags the instant they left the pocket dimension and swept them up into the air. They flew off and got lost somewhere inside the floating mass of angry crustaceans. They slapped against the writhing Merc Dwellers and slipped into the gaps between them as they were pulled ever upwards by the unnatural gravity source. They would probably reach the middle of that soggy mess if given enough time, but that wasn't something Boxy had. Not only was the Singularity about to dissipate, but the Mimic couldn't afford to let its nasty surprises get too wet.
Snack! Light it up!
Zira had, as instructed, managed to fly beyond the range of the Singularity in time and avoided being sucked into that angry mess beneath her. She hovered just on the edge of the Singularity's range and pointed her staff downward, chanting her favorite spell.
Inferno!
The towering pillar of magical fire illuminated the night and enwrapped the entire floating ball of crab. It clung to the monster's bodies, continuing to burn away at them. However, while it had been an effective area attack, it wasn't nearly enough to kill all the monsters. Nor was that the spell's intended purpose. The numerous blast powder explosives packed inside the cloth satchels were set off almost simultaneously. The already large mass of fire that was Zira's Inferno expanded to become an even larger fireball as a slew of Merc Dwellers were ripped to shreds by both the shockwaves and the shrapnel. The sheer force of the explosion sent charred lobster bits and green, sticky blood scattering in every direction, although only briefly. The strength of the Singularity's gravity field quickly pulled everything back together. Boxy's mind was once again flooded by what seemed to be hundreds of damage notifications, but it ignored them and focused only on the important one at the end.
Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 40 Mimic. All attributes plus 2.
As for the Queen, she was not entirely pleased with this development. Not only did that series of explosions hurt like nothing else she had ever experienced, but they also did a number on her brood. The shell protecting her upper body was mostly in pieces, and the succubus's magical flames still clung to her.
Snack! Finish off the crabbies! I'll get the big one!
Yes, Master.
The Singularity's effects ran out a few seconds later, releasing both the Queen and the few surviving Merc Dwellers from their magical prison. The massive monster angrily swung a claw downwards, aiming at the one who was undoubtedly responsible for all this. That infuriating half-spider, half-box, half-human?
Mind blast!
Your target has been stunned for 3 seconds. The massive crab recoiled and wavered mightily as the domination spell assaulted her consciousness. Her claw strike missed her target by a wide margin, striking nothing but soggy swampland.
Frostbite!
6 icy fangs flew out from Boxy's sides, 3 from the left, and another trio from the right. They drew unnatural horizontal arcs as they flew through the air, almost as if someone had thrown a bunch of boomerangs. They struck the Queen's vulnerable upper body from both sides like a pair of icy jaws. Your target has been pierced by the magical ice. Target HP minus 319. Granted, they didn't do much. That big-ass monster was sure to have mountains of HP at its disposal and barely even flinched. The size difference between her body and the icy fangs was like prodding a person with a toothpick.
Frostbite!
That was fine, however, as Boxy could fire off as many of the fangs as necessary. This spell was one of the more efficient ones in the Mimic's limited repertoire. Its damage was comparable to a dark explosion at only a fraction of the MP cost. The chant was also really short and could be completed even faster than a shadow bolt. Your target has been pierced by the magical ice. Target HP minus 319. The only problem was that it was really hard to aim. The odd path the projectiles took, as well as their relatively slow speed, made it substantially difficult to hit a human-sized opponent with the full force of the spell. And that was only if they were standing still. Hitting a moving target with this thing was downright impossible. That wasn't a problem right now, though. Not only was Boxy's victim as big as a barn, but it had also been immobilized by magic.
Frostbite!
Therefore, the monster kept barraging it with icicles, though not without restraint. This stupidly huge thing was bound to have HP for days, so the Mimic was pacing its MP reserves for once. It was in it for the long haul, which was why it abstained from using Power Overwhelming. Your target has been pierced by the magical ice. Target HP minus 319. The third set of projectiles hit true, but it appeared that was the last one. The queen was beginning to move around again, a clear indication she had recovered from the same spell that Boxy was currently chanting.
Mind Blast!
Your target has been stunned for 2 seconds. The towering crustacean went limp again and sank into the soggy swamp as its consciousness was severed once more. Pitch-black flames then poured out of her shell as the monstrous warlock unleashed an ebon fire spell, followed closely by another frostbite. Zira landed on the ground next to her master and unleashed a pyromancer's magma missile. Globs of molten rock launched themselves out of the ground with gusts of steam and smoke, drawing large arcs through the air before splattering across the queen's face. She definitely felt those last ones, but it looked like she'd already recovered from the mind blast. She ignored the ebon fire engulfing her and raised a claw, preparing to take out both Boxy and Zira with a single swing.
Mind blast!
Your target has resisted the spell. The Mimic tried to stop her, but it was no good. This opponent's mind had already sealed itself off due to the repeated assault, and it would take time before domination spells would be effective again. This had happened much sooner than anticipated, leaving Boxy wide open to the giant monster's pincer swipe. The shapeshifter wasn't worried, though, because its backup had finally arrived.
Aura!
Yelled Cora as she leapt into the path of that wide swing. The crab's claw slammed into her double cross-arm block. It was a heavy blow, as expected, but fiends were no pushovers. Cora grit her teeth, tensed every muscle in her body, and stood firm. Her powerful legs dug 2 narrow trenches into the soft ground as she was pushed back for about a meter, but she still stopped. She had successfully blocked a monster that was easily 3 times taller than she was. She hit the claw away with a double straight punch that left a sizable dent in the limb's hard shell. The queen lost her balance and stumbled backwards, buying the trio a few seconds of time. It was a good thing Boxy didn't have much in the way of common sense. Otherwise, it might have been too shocked by that ridiculous display to take advantage of the opening.
Snack! Crabbies?
It asked.
Dead, Master. This is the last one. What do I do, boss?
Cora asked with a hint of anticipation. Her master responded to her query by bonking her lightly on the head with the staff that its Zira-shaped upper body was still holding.
Huh?
The fiend blurted in confusion.
Dark confusion! Oh, there we go!
Cora let out a gasp of pleasant surprise as Boxy's spell took hold of her. A dark, malicious aura enveloped her body, causing it to overflow with power.
Kill it!
It commanded.
Fuck yeah! Grit your teeth, Crabzilla, 'cause you about to get wrecked!
She coiled her legs and leapt at the towering queen's upper half. Her well-toned body did a half-spin in the air, allowing her to plant a fierce dropkick right between the monster's eye stalks. The toothy smile on the fiend's face was so wide it almost looked like her lower jaw was about to fall off. It was only natural Cora would be ecstatic. It wasn't every day she got to fight an opponent bigger than herself, and she even got a dose of her favorite power-up to boot. This was the first thing resembling a challenge she had gotten after 2 weeks of babysitting that ruin of a warehouse, which made this encounter even tastier.
Snack! Support her!
Understood. What will you do, Master?
Boxy's imitation of Zira disappeared, and three tongues holding daggers took its place. Its MP reserves were already nearly dry, as even the most efficient of the warlock spells was quite demanding.
I'm killing it,
it answered simply. The harrowing battle that followed seemed like one without end. Not only did the queen appear to have nearly bottomless HP, but it was supported by many defensive skills. She also started spewing a rain of acid once her mouth and face had recovered enough halfway through the fight. Boxy and Zira were able to avoid it relatively easily, but Cora was caught up in it since she was at point-blank range. She survived the corrosive deluge but had to activate demonic carapace to lessen the damage and second wind to recover from it. The mimic then took it upon itself to pull her away from subsequent acidic geysers whenever it noticed its target was preparing to fire another one. Zira mostly circled around out of harm's way while pelting the monster with magic whenever she could. She also had to use the purge spell on the other two several times after the queen released poisonous clouds around her. Her newly acquired magma missile spell seemed quite effective, but she had to land on the ground to use it. A spray of acid from a stray merc dweller blindsided her when she was doing so. The attack didn't kill her outright but cost her the use of her wings, which drastically reduced her mobility. She was crushed under the queen's claw a few seconds later. As for Boxy, it alternated between bombarding the massive monster with magic from afar and crawling all over it while stabbing away at her flesh. It even threw the last remaining bombs it had inside some of the deeper wounds, but their effect was minimal. As the fight dragged on, it altered its tactics, opting to cast Delirium whenever there was an opportunity to use domination magic. The auditory and visual hallucinations that spell caused made the confused creature attack thin air, though its random swipes did sometimes veer toward its enemies. All things considered, it was far safer to knock the thing out with Mind Blast, but the effects of Delirium lasted 2 to 3 times longer. The fight had been lengthier than the mimic expected, which was why it had gone for the tactic that better reduced the overall risk involved. Which was probably the right call, as the Murkdweller Queen did not go down easy. Members of her stray brood kept popping up every now and then as they were drawn in by its wailing, pulling either Boxy or Cora away from the big one so they could deal with the new threats. At one point, the murky water around the giant crab's feet rose up in the air and splashed against its countless wounds, closing them up and restoring a significant portion of its vitality. Yet Boxy refused to give up. Dodging all those claw strikes, poisonous fumes, and acidic rain was nerve-wracking, but its opponent failed to land any clean hits on the spry box. It clipped it more than a few times, but it would take a lot more than that to scare off the mimic. It had used up a small fortune on the explosives, so it refused to leave until it had gotten its money back by slaughtering this lumbering pile of meat. The vicious chest's perseverance eventually paid off. In a blind rage befitting that of a berserker, Arms managed to rip off a piece of the queen's battered and beaten shell. Boxy seized the opportunity and leapt at the exposed muscle. It covered itself with sharp edges via metal mimicry and burrowed into it like the world's deadliest tick, carving and ripping huge parts out of the thing's side. The boss monster let out a series of pained screeches before finally keeling over sideways and collapsing on the ground, lifeless.
Level up!
Congratulations! You are now a level 41 mimic. All attributes plus 2.
Yes-ah!
Boxy let out a triumphant half-scream, half-roar as it burrowed its way out of its victim's insides. Its spider legs moved to an unheard rhythm as it danced a dance of triumphant joy on top of its defeated foe. That 5-star difficulty rating hadn't been for show, as it had taken over 10 minutes and precisely 1,065 GPs worth of potions, explosives, and other supplies to bring the queen down. The mimic would eventually be disgruntled at how it spent more money than it would make off its corpse, but right now it was too busy savoring the rush of victory. It wasn't the only one. Cora panted as she leaned against the gigantic carcass.
Yeah! Take that! Fucking crab!
news, boss!
The fiend was acting tough, but she was barely clinging to life. Both of her left arms had been melted away by the acid. Chunks of her body were also missing, particularly around the upper body and thighs. She'd have bled out or succumbed to the agonizing pain coursing through her body ages ago if she wasn't a demon. The fact that she was still able to trash-talk the dead creature was nothing short of a testament to the fiend's resilience and stubbornness. Boxy didn't get out of the fight entirely unscathed, either. It took its fair amount of punishment as well, but was able to pull through splendidly thanks to the incredibly delicious skill it managed to unlock mid-battle. Mend Flesh. A shapeshifter's mastery over their body affords them a uniquely deep vitality. Requirements: Level 40 Monster Job. Shapeshift: Intelligence 150. Type: Toggled. On. Activation Time: Not Applicable. Cost: Not Applicable. Range: Self. Effects: Restores missing vitality at a rate of 100 HP per second. Consumes 100 MP for every 100 HP restored by this skill. Reduces the MP consumption of this skill by 3% per level of the shapeshift skill. Increases the HP recovery rate of this skill by 20 HP per second per level of this skill. This appeared to be the same ability the Flesh Maiden Dungeon Master near Monatol used to keep herself alive despite losing sizable chunks of her body to the mimic's attacks. Needless to say, this skill made Boxy's survivability shoot through the roof. It was honestly like a dream come true. No longer would it have to rely on potions or dodging attacks like crazy in order to pull through grueling fights. Or so it thought until it got a bit cocky when it took one of the queen's acid splashes head-on and lost about 850 HP in an instant. It had to quickly drink three of its more expensive potions to get its health back to a safe level, needlessly wasting resources due to its own hubris. But that was then. This was now. And the Boxy right now had one thing on its mind. Dinner. The mimic opened its maw wide and started chowing down on the mountain of fresh meat underneath it. And it was truly tasty, for it was the flavor of victory. It crunched and munched at the corpse, burrowing in deeper and deeper like some sort of flesh-eating parasite. Almost exactly like that, actually. Once it had eaten beyond its fill, it let out a satisfied burp. Tonight was a truly splendid night. Could it even get any better? Of course it could. There was still that one thing that would make this a perfect evening.
Kadaha Assassin!
It chanted, full of anticipation. Countless purple tendrils shot out in all directions, embedding themselves inside the walls of flesh and blood around it. The mountainous body shriveled up at truly frightening speeds over the next 2 seconds as Boxy's skill greedily slurped it up. When it ended, all that was left behind was a haystack-sized pile of soggy ash. Your cadaver absorption has failed. Combined with a feeling of profound disappointment. Boxy really needed to stop getting its hopes up like that. General information. You may skip to the next part. Boxy T. Morningwood. Mimic. Greater. Genderless. 3 months old. Level 41 Mimic. Level 25 Warlock. Max. Level 12 Artificer. 1,449 out of 1,449 HP. Plus 3.7 per second. 503 out of 1,165 MP. Plus 1.9 per second. Attributes: Strength 184, Dexterity 225, Agility 174, Endurance 253, Intelligence 233, Wisdom 194, Luck 83, Mental Fortitude 150, Charisma 60, Perception 52. Mimic Skills: Assassination, Level 8, Storage, Level 7, Cadaver Absorption, Level 6, Biomass, Level 5, Natural Armor, Level 6, Metal Mimicry, Level 4, Mend Flesh, Level 2. Warlock Skills: Summon Familiar, Level 7, Power Overwhelming, Level 6, Demonology, Level 6, Crystallize Magic, level 5. Artificer Skills. Clockwork Expertise, level 3. Explosives Handling, level 2. Other Skills. Shapeshift, level 8. Stealth, level 7. Sword Mastery, level 6. Projectile Mastery, level 5. Dagger Mastery, level 8. Ruin Mastery, level 8. Domination Mastery, level 6. Spell List. Ruin. Shadow Bolt, Ebon Fire, Frostbite, Dark Explosion, Shadow Bind, Singularity. Domination. Mass Panic, Delirium, Dark Infusion, Mind Blast. Part 9. Rather than being discouraged at how unreliable cadaver absorption was proving to be, the Mimic quickly reminded itself it wouldn't even have the Warlock job or either of its deeply useful familiars without it. The skill provided it with the occasional attribute boost, and it had even lifted Shield Mastery off a dead adventurer. And there was that time it kickstarted its Dagger Mastery free of charge. Indeed, the skill was undeniably potent. Unreliable and random, but potent. Besides, tonight was still a pretty good night. It gained 2 levels, the immensely delicious Mend Flesh skill, and earned itself over 1,000 gold pieces for completing both quests. Therefore, the fact that cadaver absorption once again failed to gain anything from a powerful creature was really no big deal. Yep. It was fine. Boxy wasn't the least bit bothered by this outcome. Okay, it was bothered. It was bothered a lot, actually. Then it realized exactly how many potions and explosives were used up during the fight, and its mood got even worse. Had tonight been worth it after all? Yes, it had. Maybe not so much on the monetary side of things, but securing the ability to rapidly regenerate its HP had been a huge win. It sought solace in the fact that life would be much easier from that point on.
Hey, boss!
Cora called.
You okay?
Fine,
answered Boxy. That was actually the truth. Now that both the thrill of victory and the disappointment of losing a gamble were gone, it was actually left quite serene. Peaceful, even. Almost like...
Ah! No sleepy!
The Mimic shook itself vigorously. It was so tired that it almost dozed off right then and there. This place was far too dangerous to do that sort of thing, especially while exposed. Deciding it had better get a move on, Boxy briskly walked out of the gigantic pile of black ash and started inspecting the bodies of the lesser Merc dwellers. A good bunch of them had turned to goop thanks to that explosion, but there were still quite a few of them that were mostly intact. It then started systematically using cadaver absorption on them, one after the other, and was met, as expected, with a string of failures. Its fickle mood quickly started to sour once more, but it kept using the skill on one corpse after another. Persistence was key in this sort of thing, and it wouldn't want to waste any chance to power up. Some small part of it considered whether it should store some of the bodies for breakfast, but quickly decided against it. Objectively speaking, their meat was bad. Something in their green blood made it taste considerably foul. It wasn't poisonous, just bad. Without the taste of victory around to smooth things over, it really didn't want to bother with those unless absolutely necessary. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 16% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. The body's deteriorated condition has weakened this effect by 20%. Proficiency level increased. Acid spray is now level 3. Endurance plus 9. Intelligence plus 9.
Oh!
Exclaimed Boxy. A brand new skill popped up out of the second-to-last corpse. Cadaver absorption actually pulled through in the end, didn't it? Wait. Something was off about that notification. And what was this odd sensation it felt when it absorbed it? The Mimic quickly brought up its status window and inspected the new skill. Acid spray. Requirements: overridden. Type: sustained. Activation time: 1 second. Cost: 80 MP per second. Range: 7.9999999994 meters. Effects. Emit a spray of corrosive acid. Increases the volume and potency of the released acid by 10% per level of this skill.
What?
Okay. This was new. Actually, no. It wasn't entirely new. The mimic had already seen this sort of incomprehensible gibberish and weird squiggles once before. It was back when it was using Snack as collateral to summon Punchy. Attempting to view the Overlord's status gave it a list of garbled nonsense that seemed eerily similar to this one. Perhaps it was somehow related? It decided to double-check just to be sure. 1-800-7355-9687-7685.
Hello,
answered the familiar, raspy voice.
You've reached Demons R Us. My name is Carl, and I'll be your liaison for today.
Hey, Carl. It's Boxy.
Oh, good to hear from you, buddy. What can I help you with today?
I got this weird skill, and I need some help.
Is it directly related to your summoning contracts, bound familiars, the Beyond, and or Eldritch Abominations of Terrible Power?
I don't think so?
Then that means it's outside the terms and conditions of your support contract with Demons R Us. Sorry, buddy. Company policy. I'm afraid you're on your own.
But I saw the same weird thing back when I had Punchy.
Punchy? Oh, right. Overlord Nagnamor. You didn't summon him again, did you?
No.
You're sure?
I think I would know if I accidentally summoned a giant fire-breathing demon who can cleave mountains, Carl.
Did you just use sarcasm on me?
Sarcasm? What's that? Is it tasty?
Never mind. What weird thing were you talking about?
The skill. It's all weird and wibbly-wobbly. Just like Punchy's status back then.
Is it? I think I better consult my manager. Please hold.
Ah, there it was again. That oddly soothing music. Boxy's fascination with these tasty sounds was the reason it made so many music boxes for Artificer practice. It couldn't quite get those toys to play a tune this good, though. At the very least, they sold moderately well, to the point where the mimic actually turned a profit on them. And it felt oddly happy to be making something chest-shaped for once, even if it was just a trinket.
Sorry for the delay, Boxy. My boss said we'd better make sure there's no funny business going on. So he authorized me to help you out this one time as an exception. Send me your status and I'll take a look-see.
Okay. Sending.
Got it. And which skill seems to be the issue?
It's the acid square spray.
What? Do you mean acid spray?
I guess.
Uh-huh. One moment, please. Oh, yeah, okay, I think I see the issue. You got this thing through some sort of special circumstance rather than unlocking it normally, right?
Yes.
There's your problem, then. You're trying to view the information relating to a job or a skill that's outside your sphere of knowledge and understanding. That's why it looks so messed up.
So, this is normal?
Well, I don't know how normal it is for a mimic to have a skill from another species, but monster jobs aren't too far apart, so it's probably fine. You still understand most of it, yeah?
Yes.
Then I'd say you're good. I'd wager the skill's description and whatnot should clear the more you get used to it, so I wouldn't worry about that if I were you.
Okay. Wait, how come you can see it clearly?
Trade secret, my square friend,
Carl said playfully.
Let's just say the operators here at Demons R Us are very well informed.
I see. Thanks, Carl.
Hey, no problem. Glad you actually had a simple problem for once. And keep in mind, this was a one-time service because of our little arrangement, so don't bother calling us unless you have a demon-related inquiry. Now, that said, is there anything else I can do for you today?
Yes, actually. Can I speak with Snack like I do with you?
My
familiar, with the skin and the horns. The blue one.
Oh, right. The succubus. Yeah, it's possible. But she'd have to give you her soul number. And don't order her to tell you her soul number, okay? That could be grounds for contract termination. Especially with succubi. They're quite touchy when it comes to that sort of thing.
Contract termination was a fancy way of saying that the arrangement between summoner and familiar would be made null and void. The repercussions of such an act varied on the circumstances, but generally speaking, it involved either the warlock or the demon getting blacklisted by Demons R Us. Such individuals would be banned from forming new summoning contracts for a period of anywhere between 3 months to 500 years.
I see. I'll keep that in mind, responded Boxy.
Why do you need to speak to her directly, anyway?
I don't.
But then, why bother asking?
I was just curious if I could.
Ah. Will that be all, then?
Yes. Thanks, Carl. You were a big help.
That's what I'm here for, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The mimic double-checked its skill list and noticed that Acid Spray was now properly called Acid Spray. It would seem those squiggles really were just a problem with its perception of the skill. The contents of the skill's window were still messed up, but Boxy's mind already had all the relevant information it needed to spit acid just like those overgrown lobsters. So it decided to give it a try. First, it grew the relevant acid-producing gland through shapeshifting, placing it at the tip of its tongue. It then activated the relevant skill, causing the organ to rapidly swell with caustic fluid that appeared out of thin air. After a few moments of charging up, the monster began spewing the dangerous stuff all over the place. The liquid refused to fly farther than 8 meters, though, no matter what sort of angle or how much pressure was involved. The acid just sort of evaporated instantly if it got too far away, although it did linger for several seconds if it remained within the skill's range. Next, Boxy began pushing the limits of the skill, quickly making a few interesting discoveries. For instance, it didn't matter how large the acid gland was, where it was placed, or how many of them there were. The amount of liquid produced by acid spray each second would not pass a certain threshold. On the upside, it meant the mimic could shoot jets of the nasty stuff from any part of its body so long as it shaped the necessary organ and angled it correctly. Still, that acid was quite devastating, something the shapeshifter had experienced firsthand. Being able to use non-physical means of attack without resorting to chanting magic was quite useful, although Boxy needed to be careful not to get splashed by its own juices. Mimics were far less acid-proof than murk-dwellers, after all. Not that being injured mattered much, since mend flesh would patch things up right away. Having concluded its business in the marsh and, after forcefully dismissing Cora for whining about her missing limbs or some such, Boxy made its way back to the outskirts of Erosa. It went into the city through its secret tunnel, crawled into its hideout, summoned both of its familiars for protection, and finally allowed itself to sleep. Boxy woke up just before noon the next day at exactly 11:34, according to its tentacle-made clock. Its weekly dose of sleep lasted for almost 9 hours, as per usual, after which it had woken up feeling refreshed and full of energy. It quickly donned its disguise and set about its daily routine, albeit with a late start. It took to the now familiar streets of Erosa and made a beeline for the Mercenary Guild. It found the place practically deserted, unlike at breakfast. In fact, the only ones present were the dwarven receptionist and what looked like a male elf nursing a headache in the corner.
"Ah, if it isn't the illustrious Mr. Morningwood,"
Grog the dwarf called out to the disguised mimic, and the monster nodded in response. Boxy strode up to the bar and sat cross-legged on the floor. This put the two of them at relatively equal eye level. Sensing business was afoot, the bartender put away the notepad he was scribbling on and devoted his full attention to his visitor.
"Late night last night, eh? Ah, to be young. Anyway, what can I do for you today?"
"Quests."
"Don't tell me you're giving up."
"No, I'm done."
"Done? You mean you already killed all those crabby bastards?"
Boxy nodded once again.
"What? Even the big one?"
Grog's eyes nearly fell out of his skull when he saw the affirmative head movement.
"But you only got that quest yesterday."
"Late night."
"Ha! Ha 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 ha! I see, I see!"
The dwarf let out a short, hearty laugh, much to the chagrin of the elf in the corner still nursing a hangover.
"Hey!"
the elf in question called out.
"Keep it down, Grog. My head's about to burst."
"Ah, sorry, Lent. It's just that Master Molnenwood here has made me..."